This is IBM, the Islamic Broadcasting Network. The following program is sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the internet.
God is the light, God is the light. How great the wonder of the heavens and the timeless beauty of the night. How great, then how great the Creator. And its stars like priceless jewels, far beyond the reach of kings. Bow down for the shepherd guiding him home.
This is From Darkness to Light.
But how many eyes are closed to the wonder of this night?
With your host, Haroun
like
Shambel.
Hidden deep beneath the dark stream of desires. But like dreams vanish with the call to prayer, and the dawn extinguishes night. Here too are signs. God is the light, God is the light.
Welcome to another episode of From Darkness to Light. This is your host, Haroun Shambel of the Islamic Broadcasting Network. Without any further ado, we have with us our guest today. His name is Imran. He has been a Muslim now for 5 years, and without any delay, we'd like to introduce you and say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
So, Imran, we would like to ask you, I guess, the first question is why is it that you chose Islam?
Okay, I guess the main reason I chose Islam was I grew up Christian. My mother was Protestant, my father was Catholic, and one thing that got me about Islam was that it's very similar to what I grew up with, which was nice. How I came to know about Islam, a friend of mine actually was Muslim back in high school, and that's how I, you know, first came to hear about it. And as people often do, you know, we talk about stuff and we discuss religion here and there, and I kind of became interested in with my own studies for a few years after that. I looked at Islam a lot, and the main thing that attracted me to Islam was more the rationality, and I really liked the scientific idea, sort of like Maurice Bucaille's Islamic studies, the Bible, Quran, and Science. That book really got to me a little bit, because the scientific idea and the more rational idea is what appealed to me more than just kind of blind faith or leaving a theory that might be a little confusing.
Right. So, in what ways did you feel that the Islam was similar to the way that you were brought up?
Well, it surprised me when I first started learning about Islam that it believes in the same God as the Jewish and the Christian God. A little bit different, you know, of course, from the Trinity and such. But also we have the same prophets, which is very surprising to me. And a lot of the history, a lot of the areas the same. You know, the Middle East comes out of the same area. Like I said, the same prophets. Many of the stories are the same. There might be a little difference here and there. But overall, you know, there's just a lot of similarity.
What when you were first introduced to the concept in Islam of Jesus and the whole difference in Islamic monotheism and its difference in how the Christian thought is of Trinitarian belief, how did you react to that, or how did that, you know, touch your heart? How did it make you feel when you first were introduced to that idea?
Right. Well, the Trinity had always been something that confused me. Like, it's confused a lot of people.
Right.
So the idea of just having the one God wasn't all that big a deal. Plus, you know, I knew in Judaism, the main teaching of the Old Testament was that God was one. So I was always kind of confused on the Trinity and stuff.
Right.
Plus, the thing with Jesus, though, the one thing that really got me was, the crucifixion, how in Islam we believe that he wasn't crucified. I mean, if you're a Christian, you're raised with that,
right,
since day one, you know.
Right.
So to say, oh, yeah, no, he wasn't crucified and he didn't die for our sins, that took a long time for me to come around and, like, accept that. You know, I almost laughed the first couple times I heard it. I was like, no, no, no. But over time, it sunk in a little bit.
See, in some discussions and dialogue that I've had with some of our my Christian friends and neighbors, it's similar, like what you're saying, that how you first reacted to it. What is it that, about that concept that you think that when it finally sunk into you and it was like something that you could accept, what was the, I mean, was it something that just seemed like it made more sense to you? Was it logical, or was it, I mean, how was it that you felt that, like, you went from, you know, one position of believing he was crucified, and not only just that, but, like, that's like a major part, you know, of the Christian belief.
Right,
you know?
I think the,
and then you went to the other thing of now saying, okay, well, now I believe other than that. So right. What was it that touched you?
I think the main thing is just the initial shock, you know. If you grow up with one idea all your life and then you're exposed to an idea that's completely parallel to it, it doesn't sink in right away, you know. It's kind of like if you grow up thinking the sky is blue and then someone tells you, no, it's really green or something. That's the way it was, because this has been doctrine all my life, you know. It's just been what I was raised to know, and it was truth at the time. But I think just over time, the more I was around Muslims and the more that I studied and practiced Islam, and also the more that I studied Christianity,
right,
I was more apt to believe it, because one of the things that strengthened my faith in Islam was I'd actually study the early church, and I saw a lot of the discrepancies in what we have today compared to what I think Jesus actually taught. You know, the early church under his brother James was much more like what we have today. You know, there was a much more emphasis on the one God, and there was no Trinity idea. And not until a couple hundred years later did the church evolve to more what we see today. So I think the original church was actually, you know, in the path, the footsteps of Islam. Or Islam is in the footsteps of the church, I should say.
Hold that thought. We have to step away for a few brief messages from our sponsors. You're listening to From Darkness to Light of the Islamic Broadcasting Network.
We choose to go to the moon and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We all face unique challenges in life. And through struggle, we progress. But what makes the difference between those who succeed and those who fail? It is a clear conviction in the higher ideals and purpose of life. Have faith. It works miracles.
This message is brought to you by your American Muslim neighbors and the Islamic Media Foundation.
How great the beauty of the earth and the creatures who dwell on her. How great, then how great, the Creator.
Welcome back to From Darkness to Light. This is your host, Harun Shambel, of the Islamic Broadcasting Network. We were talking with Brother Imran in our first segment about his journey to Islam, and we'd like to pick up where we left off. When you were going through these changes, did you have a lot of dialogue with your parents and with other Christians that you knew, and were you, like, sharing these new experiences and that you were going through? Hello.
I'm probably a little bit more private person than most. Initially, I did most of it all pretty much myself after speaking with my friends and stuff. You know, I'd heard both viewpoints, and then for a year or so, I just pretty much went through it in my own head and tried to find out, you know, what was true. I was also younger then, so I was maybe a little more irrational and just impulsive. Right. My first reaction actually was towards Christianity after I started accepting Islam was kind of a negative one, I guess, because it was like I was breaking away from something I had grown up with. So I was very aggressive actually towards Christians, because I thought, hey, you know, everything I had grown up with was not really the truth. So for about a year or so, I was very, you know, offensive, like just, you know, trying to point out what I thought was wrong with Christianity and, you know, what I believe now. And now I look back and I regret that I did that, but I guess that was just part of the natural, you know, breaking away process, learning process. But now I have more dialogue with Christians. It's much more civil, and
yeah,
I actually listen more and I learn a lot these days.
What you were talking about before we had our break, you were mentioning about your studies of early Christianity and the teachings of Jesus and how it evolved through history. I wanted to maybe touch briefly a little bit more about that. In terms of where do you believe in your readings, do you believe that the pure teachings of Jesus started to evolve into what we see now is a Trinitarian belief?
Right. Well, there's actually a lot of good books. I don't have any on me right now, but I've read a few very good ones. One was actually by a rabbi, and it concerned the Dead Sea Scrolls and things like this. I think I'll give you what I know. Forgive me if I make a mistake, but no. I think it was about 300 years after the original, after Christ lived, that we started seeing the Trinitarian belief really become strong.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a sort of a break between the early church because his brother James, Jesus actually left him in charge. And James's ideals, like this rabbi and other scholars have looked at it, they were much more in line with like what we have today. I mean, they had they would only eat certain meats that had been sacrificed properly.
Right.
They would, you know, do sort of like we'll do like we have. Cleanliness was a very powerful thing. You know, they were more within the laws, almost like the Jews of the time.
Right.
But then I guess there was also the Pauline doctrine and stuff. You know, we had Paul, and I don't know if it was him specifically, but just history, it sort of seems like his idea was more in line with the Romans of the time.
Mm.
And you'll see, too, like the Trinity beliefs, a lot of them have place in, like, pagan ideas from Greece and Rome. So a lot of that sort of was incorporated into the pure religion, I think, you know, to make it more accessible to the people.
Right.
And that's where you start seeing problems. You know, it happens just about every religion.
Yeah. What do you think, I mean, because I also came from originally from a Christian background, but what is it, do you think, that that keeps so many of our Christian brothers and sisters in humanity from, you know, knowing about this history? You know, like for me, I was clueless about it. You know what I mean? Before I was Muslim, I really didn't have, you know, I was a Christian by name. But if you looked at the way I was acting and my character and things like that, you know, you would have thought like, man, this guy is like off the hook, you know, like
right.
This guy's out to lunch. He's not, you know, I don't care what religion he says he is. He's got some issues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And from your own take on things, what is it that you think in our conscious just devalues, you know, knowing our background and what it is that we say that we believe in?
Right. Well, I think going from the American perspective, one reason is that religion is just kind of a taboo subject here.
Mm.
I guess because we have so many different people and so many different religions, you know, a lot of areas you don't really speak about it, especially in an area like we live in here, where there's so many people, you know, you can easily offend somebody.
Right.
And then if you go, there's places where I grew up and places where my family lives, say like the Midwest and up north, you know, smaller towns.
Right.
Pretty much everyone's the same religion, so, you know, you don't really have to worry about it. And if you do try and, especially like a small area, if you kind of stick out, break the mold, you know, then, you know, you're sort of an outcast. So I think that's one reason.
Yeah.
And I think another reason would probably be just a lot of people try and cover up these things. You know, I mean, the church leaders don't really want you to find out this kind of thing, or they have an answer for it, supposedly. You know, it's they'll just not make it that public a thing.
Hmm. So then let's shift our gears here for a second. You had mentioned in our first segment you were talking about the rationality of Islam appealing to you.
Right.
The different kinds of miracles, scientifically speaking, that are found in the Quran, and you know, even in some cases in the prophetic traditions of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, shed some light on that for us in terms of the rationality and how it affected you.
Okay, well, just over time, I've no, well, first it was like the scientific ideals. You know, my father actually was a biologist when I was a kid, so I grew up with all the scientific ideas.
Right.
Yeah, the miracles of the Quran was the first thing that really appealed to me. You know, I was like, oh, wow, that's wonderful, that's great, you know.
Mm.
And there's still a lot of wonder in that, but that alone hasn't been the only thing. I think over time I've developed more, and just some of the ideas from the Prophet, like the Selim and the Quran itself, I just think are very, very good ideas, you know. They can actually be practiced, not just theory.
Right.
Take, for instance, you know, the idea of, I guess, just, you know, pacifism or something. It's a good idea in theory, not to hurt anybody, but there's times in this world when, you know, war is going to have to happen.
Right.
Things like that. One that really got me was the status of women and, you know, certain Islamic rules between the interaction of the sexes, you know, because at first it just, you know, I growing up with a thing like, oh, this is just oppression and, you know, we're just treating women like second-class citizens. But I've actually come to see that I treat women better and more respectful through the Islamic way.
Huh.
So I just think the rationality and is there, just the rules for living, you know. They're very, very intelligent in the ideas of what we should follow and what we should try to do.
Right.
Very appealing to me.
Okay, hold that thought. We got to step away for another break from our sponsors. You're listening From Darkness to Light of the Islamic Broadcasting Network.
If the way you dress expresses how you feel, and your dress speaks about you, then your dress not only makes a statement, but it is an important part of your identity. These are American Muslim women. Their dress reflects their faith and their belief in modesty. This message has been brought to you by your American Muslim neighbors.
This public service announcement is brought to you by the Islamic Media Foundation.
As its mountains pierce the clouds, high above the lives of men, weeping rivers for thousands of years.
Welcome back. You're listening to From Darkness to Light of the Islamic Broadcasting Network. I would like to pick up with Brother Amran on the last topic we had hit just before the break. Could you elaborate a little bit more about your experiences now in as a Muslim in learning about the Islamic perspective on the status of women?
Yeah, at first, you know, I'd grown up, I went to public high school, all that kind of thing, dating, whatever, you know.
Right.
Prom night, all this sort of thing. So when I was about 18, 19 when I was first learning these rules, and it just was such a shock to me. You know, I was like, "What? You can't date?" And you know, why do the women have to wear those scarf things? So the first probably year or so that I was Muslim, I just, you know, the hijab was like offensive to me, just because everything you've grown up with here in our culture, everything you've been told about it. But after a while, I started understanding, you know, why it's there and what it does. And that it's true that, you know, if a woman's covered and I'm not thinking of her so much in a sexual way and she's not displaying that, then, you know, I really do speak more to her as a person, intellect to intellect, you know.
Right.
And there's not nearly as much, like, a flirtation thing going on or any of that. So I find myself with Muslim women, I am much more respectful and I can actually, you know, speak to them and try to understand, you know, what they're thinking more than
right
the other thing.
Right.
And it's rubbed off, you know, the way I treat non-Muslim women, too. I treat them in a more chivalrous manner, too.
Right. It's interesting, if I can diverge a little bit. I have a good friend of mine that I grew up with, and he himself, he's a Christian, but he's kind of like, He reads the Bible, and he's really trying hard to stick to it. And so he was telling me that about a year or so ago, he was stationed in San Diego, California, and it was like the summertime. And he had like basically just made a decision himself that he wasn't going to date and stuff like that. And he was like very deeply involved in a relationship, and to the point where he had basically asked the lady that was his girlfriend at the time to marry him. And so they were like engaged in everything. And he was basically like, look, we're not going to mess around. We're not going to, you know, nothing until after we're married, period, because we have to follow what the book says. So he's telling me that one day he's like walking down the street, and like in the neighborhood where he lived, like right at the end of the block, they were having like the MTV like beach party or something like that. And there were like women all over the place, you know, flaunting their stuff and all that. And he was like trying to maintain his modesty. And so he was like, you know, he got to a point where he had to basically just start looking at the ground.
Yeah.
Because everywhere he looked, there was like a woman wearing like, you know, a bikini, and they were, you know, just, you know, trying to show and prove. And
right. So
he was like, you know, he called me a little bit shortly after that, and we were talking for a while on the phone, and he was like, you know, I realized for the first time that day when I experienced that walking down the street why Muslim women cover the way they do. And I wish that more American women would do it, you know? And this is coming from a guy who's not even professing to be a Muslim. He's just someone who's trying to hold tight to what he understands is the religion that he follows, you know? And so it is something, though, it's interesting that you pointed out, like, you know, it's, you know, you grow up in this culture, and seeing that kind of thing initially is like kind of a shock, and you're like, wait a minute, you know? Unfortunately, I have like some Muslim brothers that I know very well and that I talk to. In fact, yesterday I just had like a debate with a brother, and he was arguing that hijab is not something that's an obligation in Islam, and it's not something that's even part of the religion. It's just something that, you know, culture made up and this, that, and the other. And I was like, look, man, I was like, you know, as far as I know, it's part of the religion, you know. And, you know, it even gets to a point where there are some Muslims that you deal with that it's not a point about people and their level of faith and their closeness to God or whatever, or the struggles that they're going through in their personal life, because all of us have that. It's like a point of, like, people just don't want to accept it, because the hijab in our modern age, you know, to some people, it looks like, it makes you think like, oh, well, this means that she's like, you know, lower. You know what I mean? Oh, she's a second-class citizen. Oh, you know, she doesn't get any respect. Oh, she must not be pretty. Oh, you know what I mean?
Right.
These kinds of stereotypes. And even in Muslims, you see this, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Whereas it's funny that, you know, like, I have a friend of mine that had this experience as a Christian. And he's saying that he wished that there were more women, you know, that lived in our society here that covered that way with modesty. You know what I mean? Because it's like just what you said. It's not about, you know, looking at a woman for what, you know, gem she has physically to offer to you. It becomes a thing where you're forced to respect her for who she is,
right,
and what is in her heart and what is in her mind. And not only that, but it's also telling men, I'm going to choose who sees my gems.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, let me get off my soapbox. So we have a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you a couple of closing questions. The first thing I wanted to ask you is, since you became a Muslim, what is the greatest challenge that you've had to face that you've gotten victory over?
Well, there's actually a lot of challenges. A lot of them, I guess, probably will always be there. I think when you first become Muslim, the biggest thing is just changing your lifestyle. Because when you first change, it seems like you have to change completely, you know?
Right.
And over the years, I've realized that I've changed a lot, but I haven't had to change completely. At the core, I'm still pretty much who I've always been.
Right.
Just, you know, some different ideals here and there, and some different practices and activities.
Right.
I think one of the biggest challenges for new Muslims is, of course, family and how the family's going to react. And I'm glad that I still have some problems there, but it's gotten much better. I actually took we consider her a family member. She actually came with me to the mosque a few weeks ago because she was interested in what I do and what I believe in.
Right.
And that was, you know, really cool just to feel like I was accepted,
right,
by the family in that way. The other thing is just society. Like, at first, you know, you're like, oh, man, how are my friends going to look at me? How are people going to look at me?
Right.
Because, you know, especially in a time like now, it almost seems like you're sort of, I guess, the enemy or a traitor in a
lot
of
people's eyes. You're the black sheep of the flock, right?
Right. So, you know, here a lot of people, like, you watch the news, it makes it sound like we're some kind of, you know, traitors to our country. But I'm like, you know, both my parents were in the military. My father worked in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm still an American, but I'm also still a Muslim, you know?
Yeah.
Just because I don't agree with everything that, you know, we're doing or anything like that doesn't mean I'm a
a traitor
person.
Yeah.
I think the first, the biggest obstacle is probably just being able to accept, you know, who you're going to become and who you are and being proud of it, you know, because at first I think you're really kind of battered down by just the media, society, everything you see, you know, just what people have in their minds. Not necessarily it's their fault, it's just because that's what they've been told.
Right.
But once you get past that obstacle, you know, I've noticed a lot of people that I thought would have problems with me being Muslim are actually very interested and very accepting, you know.
Right.
And they're always asking me, and, you know, to the point where sometimes I'm just like, you know, okay, enough. I don't want to answer any more questions, you know.
Yeah.
But there's, you just have to stick with it, and, you know, I've overcome a lot of my initial fears and problems.
How would you say, we have about 2 minutes left, just with this closing point. How would you say that you, what kind of activities or practices from Islam have you instituted into your life practically to get victory over that thing, over those obstacles that you just mentioned? You know, just, you know, I guess maturing into a balanced person as a Muslim and as an American.
Right.
And what kinds of things have you done? What has been the biggest catalyst in helping you get more settled?
Well, I'm really glad. I never really had much of a problem with it, but just, you know, the major things, I guess, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do any drugs or anything like that.
Right.
You know, staying out of that kind of culture, because I used to work in a bar and that kind of thing. There's just a lot of problems there.
Is that where you got the Undertaker nickname from?
No, actually, I got it from camp. But
okay, go ahead. I'm
sorry. Just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, it's a lot of waste of money, lots of problems, you know. Actually, the whole, you know, dating scene, seeing someone every other week, you know, getting out of that is a blessing, because I know a lot of friends that I used to have who were pregnant with someone they didn't, you know, want to be pregnant with.
Yeah.
Just things like this, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of major problems. I think as myself, I've become more calm. I have more of a goal now. I have much more hope, you know, because if you just rely on yourself, no matter how big, how strong, how smart you are, the world's probably going to beat you down, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've accomplished a lot of things, but there's always some point where you just can't win. I don't care who you are. You know, you need help from somebody.
Right.
So I think my confidence and has gone up a lot. And just my feeling that it's going to be okay, you know, that no matter what happens, Allah will be there and He'll protect me. And, you know, I can always turn to Him. So I'm never going to, you know, even if a bad situation happens, just be patient. And inshallah, you know, another way will open itself up.
Yep. All right, man. Well, we thank you for joining us. We benefited a lot from our conversation with you.
My pleasure.
So we thank you for that. And we would like to say to all of our viewers to keep your dedication and focus to Allah, just as Imran had mentioned. In closing, we would like to say for all of those people who have been listening to this discussion, who are people of faith, we say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. And for all those people who are not people of faith, just remember that it's never too late. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Darkness to Light. Please join us again next week. This is Harun Chambel of the Islamic Broadcasting Network. We look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to talking to you again. Thank you. God bless.
God is the light everlasting. God is the light everlasting. God is the light everlasting. God is the light everlasting.
This program has been sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the internet.